Hillary Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
Welcome back to Trending, Dawn. It has been a busy summer thus far. You and I have both been in and out of the studio and at times not together in person.
No, it has been a lot of travel, a lot of seeing people all over the country. Time at camps. That's right. my wife and I did this road trip. You know we like road trips. You know we like national parks. This time it was, I believe it was 9 states, 3 Canadian provinces that we hit on our, gosh, I never even added up all the miles. Must have been about 3,000 by the end.
I know is that the state parks you were taking pictures of, I was jealous because I'm a huge park outdoor fan, and you went to some incredibly beautiful places.
Yes, we did indeed. Okay, what did we hit at this time? Zion, Glacier National Park, some of the parks in Canada, Waterton National Park. Amazing. You know, it's so nice. We've talked about this before, Timmery, but to get out into nature, I don't know. You feel closer to God in some ways. I just feel like you need to be out there. I have this funny little story. So we visited my sister, who lives on an acreage in Canada, basically in the middle of nowhere, but it's this beautiful spot. And as we drove up, my youngest, my 6-year-old, actually just turned 7. So my little 7-year-old, and we're driving up, and it's this long lane at the end of a very long gravel road. I mean, it's several miles even from pavement. So just to give you a picture, it's out there. And it's surrounded by fields and pasture land. And as we're driving up, my littlest one, she's like, "Dad, is this one of those hidden houses?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about, a hidden house?" She could not envision a house where you couldn't see any other houses around it. Like this was beyond her frame of reference. It was like hidden in the middle of nowhere. Like nobody else can see this house.
Spoken like a true kid Southern California.
A total Southern California kid. Like, oh yeah, we live on the cul-de-sac and we see houses everywhere we go. And
how cute.
Yeah. In fact, my other daughter, who spent the entire summer working in Canada at a camp, so she's been up there for a couple of months already, and you know, again, sort of in the middle of nowhere, and she got home and she's like, "Dad, you know, I'll be honest, there was a little bit too much grass there by the end. I was ready."
Who says that?
You know, I was ready for a little pavement, a little concrete, some stores close by. She loved it, don't get me wrong.
How
but yeah,
funny.
Different experiences.
I guess I could see that, because I think both of us kind of grew up in small towns, especially you on a farm and me growing up in the mountains. I could understand where you kind of had this desire for some stores and availability. I remember when I moved to San Diego, I would look and say, there is an In-N-Out across the street from my apartment.
Right.
There's a grocery store in walking distance. There's this thing in this shopping center. I was amazed. But I guess that's the difference based on where you grew up.
Yeah, I was the same way. I still love the city for just that reason. Like, I don't have to wait several days to try to get something by mail. I don't have to travel many, many miles and wonder if it's... No, everything's available, so I do like that. So, speaking of camp, we both had some camping experiences. Tell me a little bit about your summer camping.
So, I was not technically camping, although it came close to it. I'm laughing because one of the conferences I showed up at, we were at a retreat center, and I show up and I find out there's no bedding because I'm one of the guest speakers. And I mean, I'll list a couple names. Pam Stenzel, for anyone who knows Pam Stenzel. We had Father Imbarato and others who showed up, and there was no bedding, no towels, and we were not warned. It was entertaining. The first night was a little Spartan. That being said, I was at 2 Vox Vitae conferences this summer, camps for teenagers during the day, and in the evening, a adult speaker series. And the idea, for anyone who's been listening, has been to really form on the topics of day one is Catholicism, day two is pro-life, day three is your life matters, chastity education, transgenderism, you name it. And then the next day is your voice matters. How are we active in each our own way? And then day 5, they would have a activism type of day where we'd go and pray in front of the abortion clinic. And the kids made these sweet signs with pro-life, pro-woman messages. And many of the teens were out there sidewalk counseling for the first time. And Don, it was incredible the impact these two camps had.
Yeah, just life-changing. Summer camp, I don't know, and it is a little bit different, obviously. That's why I still called it camp. I think of summer camp, kids going away, whether they're overnighting it. You had
right.
one week where they were actually overnighting.
Yes,
right?
One of them was just drop off during the day in LA, and the other one in Orange County, they were overnight the whole time.
Yeah, so I love that. I come from a camping family. My dad directed a summer camp for, I think, about 35 years. I went all of my life. My sister now directs. That's what we were doing up in Canada. I spent several years at an inner city summer camp in Northern California working
right.
there. And so camp is sort of in my blood. And this summer, in many ways, was no different than many of the camps that I grew up with. And you sharing some of your stories from last week, it really, I thought, was very similar to mine. So my wife was speaking at a camp, actually, the one that my sister directs, a big family production. And here's what I noticed first and foremost. My daughter comes up and she has a little girl in her cabin who is just the most angry, disobedient, meanest girl you have ever seen in your life. And I sort of smiled on the inside. I'm like, oh yeah, this is, I mean, not to speak too much out of, but this is sort of why we send you to be a counselor at camp. Like, you're gonna either crash and burn or grow up or do both. Probably both, right? I mean, camp and counseling, right? Counseling at camp can be very, very difficult because you've got so many kids from so many different backgrounds. But anyway, this kid was, I mean, like strikingly angry. She was like a caricature almost. And so, you're just going to have to love her. You're just going to have to, learn some patience. And she's like, Dad, I don't know this girl. But here's the thing. Here's what we found out very soon. So this little girl, her parents had recently divorced. Her mother was now living with a boyfriend in some different town. She was getting transported back and forth. And I just thought, all the work that you and I do, Timmy, here I've been spending many, many weeks interviewing people about the sexual revolution and one of the devastating effects, and divorce is right up there, right up there.
I mean, this is at the heart. We've been doing the same mission. You've been traveling, filming for Unprotected. I mean, who are some of the people you've interviewed?
Yeah, we talked to Jennifer Roback Morse, in fact, at one of the Vox Vitae camps. We talked to Christopher West. We talked to Kimberly Hahn. Mm-hmm. We talked to Dr. Benjamin Weicker. We've got Patrick Coffin coming up. So a lot of wonderful people that we have already talked to and we're going to. So big plans.
Yes.
But divorce, in fact, Lila Miller out in Phoenix, we're going to talk to her. She does that new book. The effect of the sexual revolution on children. So here I am, sort of philosophically hearing all these stories. And then I just see it. I see it in this little girl who so clearly, and people are saying, well, maybe she has ADHD, maybe she's bipolar. I'm like, well, okay, maybe, but you know what? Primarily, she's angry because her life has been destroyed by her parents' divorce. And I just think, kid after kid, I mean, you and I both talking before the show about the different camps. So many kids are coming from broken families and they don't just show up, well-adjusted. Oh, kids are resilient. Kids are happy. No, those broken families have a huge effect on these children. And we see it as you bring them in for a week of camp.
It has a long-term impact. That was what was interesting. The first camp, we had kids who came from a little bit more wholesome families. They were, together, forming their kids, maybe had a little more religious education and morality. Second camp, we had a lot of kids who came from a lot of brokenness. And it really stood out because you saw, and the kids outright told us, and we knew in the beginning that a lot of them were dumped off and didn't want to be there. In the end, it was over about 85% of the kids who did not want to be at the camp.
Wow.
And in the end, across the board, all of them were happy to have been there. Some of them, group of boys, those naughty boys, it happens, pulled off a little incident during camp. And it was interesting to see how in awe they were by, in a sense, the mercy that was shown and not kicking them out, among other things. And it was a transformational point for them in listening to more of what was being said, to have people who truly cared. We had a couple kids who, especially on the topic of sexuality, really disagreed with what we were teaching. But at the end, it was so incredible because Doug Barry was there as well. And he was talking to the kids at the end of the camp. Doug Barry's from EWTN, has the shows there. And he was asking them about their experience. And two of the kids in particular who had very radically sexual ideologies and just said, I came believing that I would be so judged and wouldn't be welcomed. And I have been nothing but loved, welcomed. And not only that, I thought you guys were just going to be talking about faith all the time. You guys have been, but you've shown that the faith is consistent with science. And for me, that was confirmation, even of the show, of how we don't just talk about contraception and homosexuality from the perspective of faith, but we talk about psychology. We talk about social sciences, neuroscience, and how it all comes together.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that a youth's life could be changed in a sense over just a few days, right? Truly. Over less than a week. And that's exactly what we saw. By the end of that week, that little angry girl, not so angry. This, and I've seen this over the years again and again and again. They come in not wanting to be there. Their parents have dropped them off. And by the end of the week, they're crying that they have to leave. They're like, you know what? You guys love me. You love me unconditionally.
Yes.
Right? You're right. You're not judging me. You have been patient with me all this week. And I just think that's what the family is supposed to do. Right? Like, the family is supposed to be there unconditionally loving, not tearing these kids' lives apart. And so camp ministry, I love it in the various forms that we do. Please support your local camp ministry. And that, if you want something that's life-changing, get involved in that.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Growing up, Timmery, did you have summer jobs that you would do?
You know, I did have summer jobs. Some of it incorporated teaching dance.
Sure.
And other of it also, I worked at what was called our studio boutique. So next to our dance studio, we had a basically place where you could buy anything dance or anything fairy or anything super girly, essentially. It was really cool. People would come from all over to go to that boutique, but I would work there to help pay for some of my dancing.
I was going to ask, so what was the motivation? Did your parents force you to do the summer job, or you were looking for the money, or you wanted the experience? What was the goal behind getting that summer job?
Yeah, it wasn't that I was ever forced, and it wasn't even just in the summer. I ended up taking it throughout the year a little bit as well. But it was, you know, at times a little bit of need for helping to pay for my dance that was really expensive. And at the same time as well, being able to make a little bit of money at times. But it was also the sense, I think, for me of learning a little bit of responsibility for taking care of what I was doing.
Right. And I'm same way. So I did a lot of, you know, we were talking about summer camps during the previous segment. I did a lot of that working at the summer camp. But then as I grew older, high school years, I would, you know, do things like drive truck or work at the local gravel pit, you know, Canadian farm jobs. You know, you do a lot of just farming. But again, I was doing it out of the same reasons you were, I think. Need. We just needed the money. And you wanted to learn to be that kind of good worker that you're going to have to be for the rest of your life. Interesting story in The Economist just recently. Apparently, American teenagers are doing a lot less and less summer jobs.
And I thought this was interesting because even when you're out and about, you don't see a ton of teenagers in high school running any summer jobs. In fact, I ran into the first teenager just the other day. It was a lifeguard, Don. This is actually really funny. And I said, what's the date today? And she said, August something, 1999. And I look at her, I go, what? And she goes, I'm so sorry. I keep thinking about my birthday. And I look at her, I said, you were born in 99. And she goes, yes. And I said, and you have a summer job? She goes, yes. And I'm sitting here going, oh, I guess you would be 18. Yeah, and I'm sitting here thinking, you're the age, the timing of it was interesting. But she didn't have a job in high school. She had a job transitioning into college. Okay. And this is some of what we're seeing, in that it used to be that the vast majority of teenagers, actually about 72% of all teenagers, were employed in July. Now it's only about 43% as of last year.
Yeah, that is quite a striking difference. And yes. I'm with you. As I look around, I don't see a lot of teenagers doing that. We Huntington Beach here, yeah, we do have a few that lifeguard, but frankly, less than even 10 years ago, I would say. It's a lot older lifeguard crowd. Interestingly, just yesterday, my daughter, my 16-year-old daughter, who just got back from working all summer at camp, was filling out an application for a local smoothie shop. Like, uh-huh. She's ready to just keep working. And, you know, she's looking for money. She wants work experience. She wants to buy whatever she wants to buy. I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea. Go make your own money and you can spend it. That's totally fine. And over the summer, obviously, she worked. That's my experience. How does it drop from 72% to 43%? What are some of the factors that we've seen?
Some of what we've seen is that a lot of, one, you saw the issue with the economy, and that, you know, a lot of people were losing their jobs and needing work. And so it makes sense that an owner of a small business would prefer to have someone with references who is maybe a little more responsible about showing up on time and who has had work experience. So that makes sense. And it actually shows, it reflects in the numbers that you've seen a little bit more of an increase again in teen jobs in certain areas.
Right.
But a lot of it has to do with the attitude of parents, and that you don't have to have a job. We don't want you to have a job.
Yeah, this one was interesting to me. I get the economy thing. I've been there when the economy is terrible. I remember applying for a job at a cemetery as a landscaper. And the guy told me, this was back in the 90s, and we were up in Oregon, and the economy was terrible. There was PhDs applying for that position. I mean, there was like 100 people had applied, and many of them had advanced degrees. I get that. So sometimes. But this is interesting, that the parents would not want the kids to work. Part of it, it seems, is that the parents don't value the whole notion of doing, well, like the landscaping stuff. This is stuff that the kids would have done in the past, more the manual labor stuff. Yeah. You go and pack boxes or scoop ice cream, I guess, or mm-hmm. as me, you're out there landscaping. They don't want that. They see that as derogatory. And there is an yes. attitude in the culture that manual labor is less valuable than what? Intellectual labor? I don't even know what white collar stuff. And we're pushing that on our kids even at a very young age, apparently.
And you know what's fascinating about that point is I can't tell you how many friends I have seen get out of school, end up going and working for a number of years at a local coffee shop. And this is after they've graduated with the bachelor's degree, even a master's degree, to be quite frank.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that later on in this show about, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but here's the other part that's happening. They then end up working in the job that they're hoping for on the way, right? More in their field. And they're shocked. I have to lift some boxes to help organize this event.
Oh, really?
I have to. There's this kind of shock that a lot of people have, that it's not just that you get to do your job, but there's office work involved, that there's, you know, lifting and organizing and carrying things to an event that you've organized. Like, people can be shocked. And
fascinating.
I think it has to do with this attitude of just study, take summer courses, and that's part of what people are saying, and focus on sports. Don't worry about a job right now. It's actually creating a lack of a strong work ethic.
Yeah, well, that's interesting that the whole, I think the lifting boxes thing, it's not by accident that they would look down on that, because there is an attitude towards manual labor that the superior people, the superior attitude is to only use your mind. It's a very Gnostic notion, actually. Gnosticism is the idea that the spiritual, the intellectual is the superior realm, and the physical realm is less than. It's evil in some senses. And that translated back in those days to, you had a working class in ancient Greece and Rome, for a working class that would do all the labor, and then the upper class would just sit around, you know, drinking and doing whatever they want to do. Now, Christianity defeated that notion, Right. Over the history of Christianity, the history of the West, manual labor has been extolled, that the work ethic that we have as Christians values the use of the body. And hey, it doesn't matter what you do. Yes, some people are going to use their minds and they're going to write books. And but you know what? Hopefully they're out there gardening and all that other stuff, too. And it has been the return of this Gnosticism, unfortunately, that I think we see in our culture today where, well, you can't grow up to be. When I tell people that I've been a grave digger, you can't imagine the looks. What? You did what? You dug great. What?
It might just be that they're creeped out by dead
okay.
people, too.
All right. Fair enough. But I think it's more like you would actually... So that's what I did during college, because right. it started out that there were only limited opportunities for people with I-20 visas. So I'm from Canada. You come down. You can only work for the school or for... organizations that have a deal with the school. So it turned out that with my farming background, the cemetery across the street from my university had an opening, and so I would do their landscaping, but it also involved digging graves, and I could run the backhoe. But people thought, well, how can you do that, Dawn? How could you possibly go and, you know, swing a shovel and all that? Yeah. I'm like, well, it's work, right? What's the problem?
Well, and this is what's so fundamental that people are missing. We have this attitude that we should have, and that there's dignity in working with our hands, working with our minds. There's a dignity of the person in having responsibility and tilling and keeping and working with the earth, working with our computers. There is something good about that. Not that that work gives our life meaning, but we give meaning to that work. And it's part of what helps to make it so that we can live, eat, and so forth. And I think maybe because we have this removal of, you know, gardening for our own mouths to eat, instead right, we make money and then buy it, we've lost the fact that actually it's natural and good to carry those boxes or dig that hole.
Well, and don't we spend a lot of time then doing exercise to try to make up for the lack right. that a lot of us probably would naturally, you'd naturally stay in better shape if we just did the sort of normal manual labor stuff that traditionally everybody would have done, right?
Exactly.
And so now we're paying thousands of dollars to the local gym shop. Anyway, I think that's part of it. I don't think that's the only part, but that's part of why parents might discourage their kids to go get a summer job or start your own business mowing lawns or something. No, parents don't want that because, no, you're not going to grow up to lift boxes. Right. You're not going to do that. The Mike Rowe kind of jobs, right? The dirty jobs. I mean, I think we've talked about him before on the show. He's very good at saying, listen, we need an increase in people who are willing to do things like fish or whatever, right? Like farm or do the more traditional vocational work. Now everybody wants to just sit in a, well, I don't know if they want to sit in a cubicle, but that's what they end up doing, sitting in cubicles.
But aren't people saying, I'm unhappy with that?
Yeah,
I feel empty. There's a lack of meaning. I feel alone. And this is what a lot of these people, and men are being criticized for wanting to have a big cars or take up their fishing hobbies or their bike riding hobbies. But really, these are the guys who are in cubicles saying, I need to get out and be active.
Well, yeah, that's right. And oftentimes they maybe find some joy in a hobby, right? Like, right. Oh, I'm going to go be a painter, or I'm going to build something in the backyard or whatever. Yeah, that's exactly right. Maybe it's the creative aspect of a lot of that manual labor. Like, you can look at your garden and you can take pride, or you can build that shed in the backyard.
I did that. Right. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. I did that.
You look at that. That is the work of my hands. Isn't that perhaps part of being made in the image of God? Is that we're co-creators with God, and he has left us that. And when we just sit back and think that, well, I don't have to do any of that stuff, or that stuff is degrading, that we're losing part of what it means to be created in the image of God.
I think that's fundamental to this topic and understanding the importance of work.
This is Trending with Dawn and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
Talking about summer jobs, one of the neat elements that The Economist mentions is people like Ronald Reagan. And it actually takes Ronald Reagan's story and how he was a lifeguard, among other things. And he worked 12-hour days in the summer, creating stability for his home as a teenager, where they frequently moved. His father struggled with alcoholism, and they were faced with financial ruin at times. And how his summer job, he had a sense of responsibility. And how for so many people, looking at Ronald Reagan, you know, he wasn't the same young man he was when he was much older, but how for many successful people today, it started with this idea of hard work. And I love one of the little quotes, and I pulled it out from this article, where it says, drudgery can teach humility.
Yeah, drudgery, as painful as it is very important in developing character. And we're looking at a story from The Economist about the lack of teenagers working. And they talk about Ronald Reagan. Let me give you another quote. Every summer from 1927 to 1932, he would rise early to collect a 300-pound block of ice and hamburger supplies before driving in his employer's van to the river, working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it did offer money and stability in a childhood where he was moving around a lot. But I think your point, Timory, that what that also offered ultimately is character. I mean, one of the things we think of, at least when I do, and I enjoy visiting the Ronald Reagan Library, one of our favorite homeschool trips. We try to make it at least once every couple of years, is a man of character, that he had principles, and he would, even in the face of adversity, follow certain principles. I don't know that you can grow that character without a certain amount of drudgery.
That's
like
true.
To persevere in the face of whatever, whether it's a 300-pound block of ice or the Cold War, right?
Like,
I was just reading, actually, Paul Kengor's book on Reagan and Pope John Paul II. Fascinating book, by the way. Also brings in a lot of Mary and Fatima and the whole story. I think it's on, to put another little plug in, I think Patrick Coffin has him on this week
his
podcast. So I've heard him several times. Great book. But I don't think we can underestimate the value of those summer jobs. And this maybe is what's missing in so much of our, well, I was going to say millennial generation, but frankly, I mean,
no,
us Gen Xers, you know, we weren't too far beyond. But
you know what? This is what stood out to me about it, Don. This is kind of transitioning us into the next part of this conversation. Even in college and right after college, I saw many of my peers who did not work during college and after college still had this attitude, well, I'm going to take a long extended period of time off. And I had the opposite. I worked a ton during college. I worked full time during grad school. And there is a sense of responsibility, sense of growing up. But a lot of my, you know, peers, parents would say, no, don't have a job, or just take out, or they'd have this attitude of just take out the student loans to cover all your expenses. And what I saw, though, is that a lot of them were surprised then when they entered the workforce, they couldn't figure out how to get a job. They had no work experience to qualify them for a job outside of what they believed was this little paper degree that made it sure and certain that they would get that job. But then they get to the job and it's challenging. It's exhausting. It's 8, 9, maybe more hours in a row of having to be at the same place. I saw a lot of people struggling because they had no work experience.
Yeah, they have no idea. And this is employers, of course, complain about this constantly.
Right.
And I know a lot of business owners, and it is difficult. They are having a hard time finding young people who will A, show up on time,
right,
B, not have this weird sense of entitlement that, all right, I'm going to take this 4-hour lunch and I'm not, you know, like this, and that are just able to do it. In fact, one of the stories they were complaining about, the college-educated youth not being able to write an email that doesn't embarrass the company.
Well, and that's actually in the Daily Signal. They're talking about, is college education worth it? And that's what they're asking. A lot of employers are seeing these college graduates who they can't write the email that's
right,
not embarrassing. Like, I can't believe that many people are facing that.
Well, on one hand, I have the same attitude. On the other hand, as a parent who's trying to raise kids and, you know, interact with our school culture and all the rest of it, Yeah, reading, writing, and arithmetic, not really on the top of a lot of school curriculums these days, right? It's not that we're going to train you in the fundamentals just of life, of communication, of these kind of things. It's not that we're going to do that and then even, frankly, even train you for a job because, and I want to ask you about this, Temri, what kind of jobs did they think they were going to get? I almost understand the notion of going to college because I'm training for a particular job. So, in fact, I was talking to my nephew the other day, wants to be a lawyer, so he's got this plan mapped out. All right, I'm going to go to pre-law. And then, okay, I get that. You know, you understand. But it seems
to be... Where do you want to work? What's your goal?
Yeah, right. A lot of them are like, well, I'm going to go get a degree in ancient sub-Saharan, you know, whatever. And they come out of it. And what do they think they're going to do with that? Right. I don't know.
Right. Not well, sure. And you know what's funny is I'll be talking to people because I teach Pilates as well. And I teach Pilates because I knew I needed to have something that really covers me financially so that I can do a lot of my ministry work because a lot of it is volunteer at times.
Yeah.
And it's also not always consistent. And so for me, I basically went out and I'm practicing a trade. I got my certification. I was certified with a bunch of other people. And get this, who are physical therapists, have gone through the education and now are coming and doing this rigorous Pilates training education to work with the spine. And really, that's what I do. And so I bring that up because there's this element of having both and. But I train my clients and they'll say, oh, you went to college, didn't you? I said, yes. I said, I actually have my master's degree.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, what in? And I said, exegetical biblical theology. over and over again, they go, well, honey, what do you want to do with that?
Yeah, right.
And I say, actually, I have a radio show and I'm a Catholic speaker. And they said, oh, you're actually doing exactly what your degree prepared you for. And I said, yes, this was a plan. And, you know, grant the plan shifted a little bit in terms of exactly where I'm at, but I had a goal in mind. A lot of people don't have a goal in mind for where they're transitioning to.
Right. I'm not sure that, I'm not sure that universities have a goal in mind, but I actually do think they have a goal, but it's a goal that has shifted over the years. So traditionally, classically, a university would provide you a unified view of the world, right? So we're going to bring in all these disciplines, but we're going to do it within one worldview and show you how they all interact and provide you with one unified view of the world. That's why it's called a university. And it was a very Christian thing, right? We had a Christian worldview. Universities grew up in the Catholic West. Just to throw that out there, that's where we got the whole notion of a university, in the Catholic West. And under that worldview, we would do a couple of things. One, we would develop your character more. Hopefully it has become developed as you've grown up and worked and all the rest of it. But now we're going to develop you more and we're going to try to make you wise, right? Like the goal of a good education, said Aristotle, was to make you like and dislike what you ought, right? And so we're going to develop your character to like the proper things and to dislike
Become a critical thinker.
Become a critical thinker, but also just a good person, like a wise and good person, right? So a character-filled person who is trained in certain things. Now, there was vocational things as well, but the university, no, not so much, right?
It was to build virtuous people, but what do we see on college campuses now? We see major areas, I'm sorry to be so blunt, basically human orgies, sexually transmitted diseases. And guess what? Most kids lose their faith when they go to college. And this includes some of our so-called Catholic schools.
Well, because the goal now is we don't have schools that have the traditional Christian notion in mind. Well, what is their goal? Like, what are you trying to do? A lot of times it's just flipped. I'm going to train you to like and dislike what you ought, but now I'm going to train you to like things that, you know, the sexual revolution has taught us to like. So you are going to be affirmative of all of the things that traditionally we would have thought were immoral. You're going to practice promiscuous sex. And frankly, schools are encouraging that, right? And so they still are in the business of developing people to be a certain kind of person. Unfortunately, it's the wrong kind of person. person. And along with that, they're not actually training us to do any of the job stuff that we might have been able to do in the past. And so to me, I have a hard time defending most of the university system, frankly, right? Like they ask, is university worth it? Well,
For some, yes.
For the thousands and thousands of dollars that you're going to spend, you better be sure that you have a particular goal in mind and that you're not just going off to, well, have some fun for 4 years and live apart from your parents. I mean, no, then that's not worth it,
exactly.
I would say.
Well, and here's the numbers from 2012. You had 115,000 janitors, 16,000 parking lot attendants, 83,000 bartenders, and 35,000 taxi drivers with bachelor's degrees.
Yeah, there you go. So you might as well have just gone and trained for that job and accepted it. If you want to be the barista, nothing wrong with being a barista, but you don't need then the $100,000 in debt to do that. I'm just guessing. I haven't actually worked at Starbucks or whatever, but I'm guessing you don't need the $100,000 education to learn how to make a good cup of coffee. And so, yeah, I would say think about what kind of character are they promoting? What skills are you obtaining at that school? And is that worth the money?
And how are you going to pay off your debt if you're entering into debt?
That's a big question.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending with Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Before we change the topic here, Don, on is a college education worth it? We're not saying, hey, you shouldn't be educated, or if you were educated, you did something wrong. If you're working in a job that maybe you're struggling, you are a bartender, you are a barista, whatever it might be. What we're saying is we're helping to prepare people for the future and also face the reality of the challenges right now. And we have a tremendous number of people who are overqualified for the work that they are doing. The reality is 1 in 3 graduates hold a job historically held by those with a high school diploma.
Now, you say overqualified, and I hope that's the case. I mean, in one sense, of course you are. But as we talked about in the last segment, let's make sure that 4 years or however many years of school you are doing actually does prepare you for something. So it could be that you do have the 4-year degree and you're wondering, well, why am I still doing whatever? Because maybe that 4-year degree didn't actually prepare you well. So if you can't write an email that doesn't embarrass your company, if you don't know what a verb and a noun do, right? If you can't put a sentence together, like I would actually concentrate on that first. Make sure your education is getting you the basics. Like, have you read a book? There's a college graduates that go through college without reading books.
A lot of my classmates would somehow take their exams, do their tests without ever having read the books. And I was shocked. But here's part of the concern. It's that we have declining academic standards with a lot of our universities. Not only that, but because schools want to rank higher, you have a tremendous amount of grade inflation as well. And so what's happening is you have people who are underqualified to be in the education system who are then especially having to take remedial courses. 50% of people who go to community colleges are in remedial courses. 25% of them, these students who take the ACTs back in 2012, didn't even meet the basic standards. Now, that being said, some people are not good testers. I wasn't. I struggled with ACT test. I had a really hard time just throwing that out there if anyone else struggled. But the reality is that these kids who are going to community college are having a hard time even passing their remedial courses, and actually, a lot of them don't even continue on.
Right. And can't we put a little bit of blame there probably on the high schools. It seems like we've got this nasty sort of bubble where the high schools have to inflate grades so that they can show how many of their kids
are
going off to school, right, off to colleges. Colleges have this huge financial incentive to bring as many kids in as possible so that they can fill up the new dorms that they've paid with all the government money that they're getting. And so they have to accept the high school kids, right? And so we have so many colleges putting so many kids in that are not actually up to standards academically.
It's atrocious because in reality, what you're describing is it's good to have a business. This is great. They're running as businesses, but we have to realize the government money that's going to a lot of these institutions and the increase, the inflation of prices for college because college is so often funded by student loans now have hit, I mean, an astronomic high and people are struggling and we're not seeing the payoff for many graduates. And you know what? This kind of transitions me in a little bit in some ways. You know, the gentleman who was fired from Google, I'm thinking about him. And I don't know if you read, for those who don't know, he basically wrote a like 10-page piece on him being anti-diversity, but he actually really is pro-diversity in many ways, James Damore. And he was fired from Google for just talking and kind of mentioning there's an issue with this diversity policy. It's not really diverse and actually recognizes differences between men and women. If you read the piece, Don, it's excellently written. Someone who's a critical thinker.
The whole notion that he got fired because he mentioned, it seems now, correct me if I'm wrong, but his problem was, according to Google, that he dared to suggest that men and women might be different, like innately different. Am I summarizing that correctly?
Apparently,
is that sort of the bottom line?
What Google showed basically is that if you complain to human resources about anyone, they'll fire them.
Okay, well, that's not good, is it? You know, I was thinking of, it's so sad that we cannot say anything that would suggest that men and women might be different. This takes really strange forms, right? So, for instance, I saw a piece in England where Great Britain has banned a TV advertisement because it promotes what they're calling gender stereotypes. And here's what it showed to me. A woman in the kitchen making a meal. This is...
That is sexist.
That is sexist.
Good grief.
It said it was encouraging a stereotype that women would be... I don't know. It's not even that they're confined. You can't even... So
we're creating ideologies for young women that only they can be homemakers and that they alone should hold the responsibility of housework. That's not what's being shown. And so you can't have any ad apparently anymore that shows anything like this. And not just for women, but gender, quote unquote, roles for men and women.
What's so sad about this? Ross Douthat had a pretty decent piece in the New York Times about this, is that the more we talk about genders as being completely the same, like there is no such thing as gender, right? There is no such thing as male and female. The more we talk about that, the more we are actually separating the genders in an unhealthy, bad way, where actually the bad stereotypes are being pushed to the front, and it's not the, it's not the woman in the kitchen, it's the woman being raped, for example. How many rapes do we have to see? And I don't watch any of these shows, but I keep up on the news enough to know that, for example, apparently most of the female cast of Game of Thrones has been raped at some time during that program.
And often a lot of these films are showing these rape scenes. That was one of the issues with 13 Reasons Why. They show in graphic detail what's happening. And it's ironic because then you see people also like James Damore, who's fired from Google, saying, hey, we can't really talk about anything. It's an intolerance of ideas if basically someone disagrees with our other ideology. And what's at the heart of what James Damore said is that we really are being sexist in many ways because we're creating all of these programs just for women, only women allowed, to help them get ahead in work and so forth. Yet men are struggling with work too. men are struggling with different areas of their job, of their home life, and we're not creating programs exclusively for men, no women allowed. And so then you compare that then to how, for some reason, it's okay to show women raped all the time on TV. It's just, there's this ideology that doesn't match up. Here's another thing, Don. Serena Williams, for example, is being bashed by radical feminists who think that there's no difference between men and women, essentially, and that all of the female body should essentially be neutered, right? I mean, this is where they're coming from. They're criticizing Serena Williams, historically one of the greatest tennis players ever, for being excited to be a mother and how she finds that this is, she has made comments like, I feel like I'm going to be a woman. She feels more connected with her body and who she is. And she's celebrating life and children. And people are criticizing her.
Yeah, well, this was her line. She says, I have so much respect for so many women for giving birth, she told Stellar magazine. I'm about to be a real woman now, you know? It's going to be something incredibly impressive to go through. Well, I can just see that people, like, their heads are exploding. Real woman? How dare you? But isn't she onto something here? Like, guess what? It is something incredibly impressive to bring another human being into the world. Like, you are a life-giving thing. It's unbelievable. And guess what? It's something I can't do. Right. It's something that I, as a man, I look at that and I'm like, wow, that's unbelievable. To not celebrate that is to degrade you.
Right. And is it, and for those women who struggle with infertility, they're struggling with infertility. There's something they are wishing they were able to do and have an experience. And some people are saying, well, Serena Williams is being offensive to women who choose not to have children or can't. No, she's celebrating that she's having a baby. And if you struggle with infertility, recognize that is an extreme cross to struggle with. But what we're talking about is the celebration of life and being able to be a mother. Did you know that Serena Williams won the Australian Open in January? And she was pregnant. Shouldn't feminists be celebrating that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, shouldn't we be celebrating all of the wonderful aspects of what it means to be a woman? But no, we can't do that anymore, right? Right. And I do think it goes back to that separation of sex from childbearing. And right. That has had so many negative effects on our culture. I just don't think we can really focus on that enough. So it's exciting. I think it's thrilling to see Serena Williams happy about having a baby.
If anyone's interested, we're wrapping up the show here. I'm really excited to share that I've been asked to help lead a pilgrimage to Italy in April 19th through 29th. If anyone is interested in coming, there will be a priest from the community of St. John. He's a monastic brother who is bringing such an incredible element of prayer. We're going to Assisi. The trip is titled Following the Saints, and that is what we will be doing the whole time. I hope you can join us. You can find info at my website, timmarie.com.
That sounds fantastic, Timmarie. I hope many, many people join you on that. Don't forget that you can find out more about my work on the sexual revolution at reversetherevolution.com. You can support the documentary that we are making and see some of the latest updates there. Don't forget to contact us at Timmarie on Instagram, Twitter, those sort of things. You can find me on Twitter at Don Johnson Media. And you can find all of the archives. Don't forget to go to iTunes and subscribe and leave your comments for the show.
This has been Trending with Don and Timmarie on Immaculate Heart Radio. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmarie Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmarie.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.